Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
We was born off that. Well, I was born off that.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotero. This is episode 154, a talk with Dame Grease. Dame is a producer who has sold over 40 million records in his storied career. He got his start working with The Lox and had his first hit with their tribute to Biggie Smalls, We'll Always Love Big Papa. After giving The Lox several of the biggest songs on their debut album Money, Power, Respect, Dame started working with another member of the Rough Riders camp, DMX. He produced almost the entirety of X's 1998 debut, It's Dark and Hell is Hot, beginning a working relationship and friendship that continues to this day. That album sold over 5 million copies and moved Dame into the ranks of superstar producers. He made hits for Cam'ron, Nas, Noriega, Freeway, and countless others. Then he moved on to a whole new sound, helping Max B and French Montana define their wave movement. Today, he's still making songs at a record clip, and we do mean that literally, as you'll hear towards the end of the interview. We talked to Dame via Skype from his home somewhere down south. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cipher as soon as it drops, subscribe on iTunes. Once you do that, you'll also be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, you should check out our interview with another great producer, Focus, on episode 130. Also consider helping the show by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecipher show and sign up. If even a fraction of our listeners contributed just a dollar a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to, on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's the 40 million man, Dame Grease. Your aunt and your mother, and I think your father, were all musicians, right?
That's true. Let's keep it all the way real, because, you know, when you get older, you get all the details. My father sung doo-wop, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't a gone-like type career, but, like, as far as people, his friends and things, tell me he had a wave. You know what I'm saying? Him and his guys would be on the corners, how we used to freestyle, how we freestyle, they'll be on the corner, doo-boo-ba-ba, you know what I'm saying? And be hitting it like that.
Okay, nice. And your aunt and mother were in a disco band?
Yeah, my mom's, she grew up, my grandfather's a deacon, Deacon Blackman, Friendly Baptist Church in the Bronx, so my mom's grew up in the choir. She sung all her life and different things, you know what I'm saying? Then I remember I got a picture I could probably send it to you. I was probably like 3 or 4 or 5. And I remember it was all 70s, because I was born in 74, so it had to be like 79, 80. Then it was all the people, my moms, my aunt, they had a guitar, it was my dog, it was a whole bunch of everybody. Just like how we be doing now, having fun, that's how I looked then, but I was a little kid in it.
Nice. So when you started rapping, you had this group, NIB, right?
Yes.
Did they ever record?
Oh, man. I mean, we did hundreds of songs. See, the thing is, back then, you know, like I said, parents was into music and different things, and then you got the crack and drug era, which kind of erased everything and it turned everything into survival. So at the same time, with being reintroduced back to music was groups like Public Enemy, NWA, Tribe Called Quest, Liz and New School, with different groups that brought back into, you know what I'm saying, when you out there, you know, a young guy surviving on the streets, and then you hear music like, we can live! Like, oh, shit. we can, you know what I'm saying? So I like Public Enemy and NWA. So when we got into it, I put the group together, NIB, which is me and my childhood friends. You know what I'm saying? It was actually spinned off a little bit of NWA, the Niggas in Black, you know what I'm saying? But that's what we put together. And we was like, nah, you know what I'm saying? We're going to kick the shit that whatever we're going through, you know what I'm saying? So we put it together, started out with three of us, then with the five of us, then all of us started rhyming. Then I started breaking the 20 of us up into different groups, which was NGN, Mad Ones, which actually they on the Live on Linux album.
Niggas want why? What you want now? Operation lock, shut niggas down. Nothing to gain. Niggas want what with my gang? I'm gunning them things. How do you slump up in the range? How do you die?
The group Dame is referring to here is actually Hot Ones, who appeared on the Live on Linux compilation he put out in 2000. The compilation includes tracks produced by Dame and features artists such as DMX, Scarface, Silk the Shocker, Noriega, and Nas, as well as unsigned artists like Hot Ones, Mad Is On, and others. Dame even raps on a track, appropriately entitled, Me.
And I was actually doing a label before I didn't even know I was doing it.
Nice. What was going on during all of that, there was a whole bunch of battle stuff, right?
Yeah.
In Harlem, kind of around the same time. What was the battle scene like at that point?
Man, we was burning everybody. And anybody that want to know, we was burning everybody. Mino, Pele Sean, Big Stan, King Dolo was burning everybody. So like I said, when we saw it coming from our block, 29th Street, we saw it getting it pumped up. You know what I'm saying? It started going around. And there was a time, actually, Crazy Sam from Mino Video Music Box used to do the talent shows. We used to blow every last one of them down. You know what I'm saying? We was like the young, rowdy guys. And even was one time we had a big battle in St. Nick Park with Children of the Corn. So that was
Mace, oh, wow. So that's Mace, Cameron, and Big L and all that.
And Big L. Now, from I wasn't a rapper, you know, I was just a beat guy. But Big Stan, Pele, Battle, Kate, Mace, and Cam, and burnt them. And you can ask Cardan, PR Cardan, because he was about 4 years old on the fence, sitting up there. You know what I'm saying? But it was something good after, you know, we did that battle, because they actually raps was more, you know, it was slick talk raps. It was good. It was hot. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they wouldn't be superstars today if they wasn't. You know what I'm saying? But it was slick talk raps. Our stuff was more aggressive. It was like, fuck that. Wrap you up, tie you up, beat your moms up with the pistol, huh? You know what I'm saying? And that's the shit we used to come up with. And actually, in the future, that's why my beats adapted with X. You know what I'm saying? But we all had a more aggressive style.
Mm, nice. Did L stand out back then as being kind of exceptionally talented? Or is it just kind of that happened later? It's because he passed so young, people don't remember him that way?
No. I'm Dame Grease, and actually, I sold 60 to 80 million records. And I'm probably one of the most selling guys in the borough of Harlem. Keep it 1,000. Actually, probably in some parts of New York City compared to Puff and Jay-Z and persons like that. But Big L is the king. Big L is the first guy from all of us being little niggas, the first one to get signed. He got signed with the homies from the Bronx, DITC. So Big L is that guy. You know what I'm saying? He was the first guy, like all of our age range.
Mm-hmm.
To get signed. You know, there was other guys. Teddy Riley grew up the block. Raw Bass was from Lincoln Projects. You know what I'm saying? There was other talents in the area that we knew. But as far as us little knuckleheads running around, L was the first one.
How'd DJing play into all this for you?
My mentor and my uncle, Shorty Mac, because he's actually the one who had the equipment plugged up in the crib. You know what I'm saying? And we used to go there, and I was like back in the Nubian days when it was like flat tops and medallions and shit. And, you know, we was like, little, we was little dirty motherfuckers. You already had no parents. We was out there, and motherfuckers was come upstairs, and they was kicking that shit. We was like, yo, y'all whack. You know what I'm saying? Like, y'all trash. And they was like, you little motherfuckers, bad little motherfuckers, so what can you do? And that's where we at right now. You know what I'm saying? So from that point, you know, we proved ourselves into working, and then it was like my guy Short, he was like, you know what? Let me back up. Do what you do. And I saw blending certain things together, elements, and then, you know what I'm saying? And I used to make a song concepts that was a little before his time on the four track, you know? And that's how everything started off.
Wow. So your first placement wasn't a song, but rather you kind of scoring a speech on the Get on the Bus soundtrack.
Yeah. Oh,
How did that happen?
You know what? That's cool, man, because a lot of people don't know that shit, man. Everybody account We Always Love Big Papa to my first single. Mm-hmm. But it was Allende's speech that was on the Get on the Bus soundtrack. And it was, at the time, we were shaking the bacon. I remember my lawyer at the time, Londell McMillan, he was a executive producer of the whole May Man March and the tour and everything. So it was, I was an up-and-coming, about to be kick-ass producer. So we couldn't actually get a placement for a track of mine with the artist on there. But he was like, you know what? You know, this little, I think, you know what, man? After we do this, like, send me, like, a Twitter of Allende, like, how old is he now? Because we never met each other, but he was about 12 or 11 when he kicked the speech and I put the beat on it.
Oh, wow.
So I don't even know how old that brother is now or wherever he's at in this world, you know? That would be something real cool to connect, you know? But, he had speech, they sent me the acapella, and I just put a slamming beat behind that shit. And it just actually played into a soundtrack of what he was talking. And actually, that speech need to go out now. Matter of fact, I need that. I'm about to put that on my SoundCloud.
Yeah, it's out there. It's out there. You can find it in the, you know, in the wilds of the internet.
I'm about to tweet while we're talking.
So your first big hit, like you said, was We'll Always Love Big Papa.
In the clouds, hope you pass the sun. Hope you right next to God and he calling you son. Taking you in, angels breaking you in. This is heaven and no longer do you have to sin. And may God.
Now, when you were doing the music for that, did you have any idea that it was going to be kind of like a tribute song? Like the music seems to fit the subject matter so well.
See, this is going to be a real good interview because a lot of people don't know that song and that beat was channeled through me. And I'm going to tell you like this story. Lox and Mace had first got signed to Bad Boy. We did the You'll See with Puff.
L to the O to the X, You'll See.
Bad Boy, Bad Boy, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? You'll see. You'll see.
Even before the Benjamins and If You Think I'm Jiggy and all this type of stuff. So we was the young guys. I was with Bad Boy. And we went to, Puff flew us to L.A. when Big got killed. And we was there. We was right there when Big got killed. And we was like little young dudes. Me, Jadakiss, Styles, Mason, Sheik, you know what I'm saying? And so on and so forth. And I remember we said what's up to Big and Puff and Stevie J at that party, the Vibe party. Then we went to a house, a party in the hills with DJ Clue. By the time we got to the house with DJ Clue, people ran up and was screaming, yo, Biggie got killed. At that same exact moment, we went back to the hotel and I remember the big homies, the security, they threw us all in the room. They stood in front of the door, packed everything up. We was on a plane next to them 5.5 seconds. I don't know how they did it, but they pulled flights off in 5 seconds. And we was actually out of California in 5.5 seconds. You know, we was young and shit. We was like, oh, shit, Biggie, Tupac. Oh, what is this, people? Oh, my God. You know, we didn't know what the fuck was going on. You know what I'm saying? We straight from the street. So about time on... We got back to New York, you know what I'm saying? DNY, you know, and everybody collected. It's like, yo, man, we should make a tripping song. And then I went to the keyboard. And I always said this to this day, I still can't replay them chords because they kind of my head, it was channeled. You know what I'm saying? So when I, boom, boom, and then I pull my flute. Then from there, when I played the melody, the flute, it was like, no, we need some kids to sing that. So we brought kids in. We sung, you know, we had the kids singing from the neighborhood in Yonkers. They sung the hook, Lox the day piece. Then we was going to let it go. But then, you know, just keeping it, you know, official with, you know, with God. It's like, no, we're not going to do this because we don't want to feel like we're trying to monopolize or something. So we did the right thing. We took it down to Puff and Lil' Kim and them, you know what I'm saying? Well, I didn't. I was just a producer. But DNY, they took it down and they played it for him. It's like, hey, man, we did the song, so on and so forth. And, you know, we thought that Puff and them was going to be mad, like, what the fuck, man? Ah! But actually, it turned out different because I think it was Puff. What I was told, Puff, Lil' Kim and all of them, they started crying and everything. And they actually said, thank you. You know what I'm saying? They said, thank you, thank you. Because I guess they were so distraught, they didn't even know what the hell they wanted to do next in life. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they homie got, you know, killed. That's what it is. You know what I'm saying? So at the same time, when we were getting the song, it was actually like, thank you, man, thank you. And then, you know, we said, oh, all right. Shit, cool. All right. But then that's when they made the Missing You record, the other tribute record, which was the lead single.
Don't give anything to hear half your breath. I know you're still living your life after death.
it was We Always Love You Papa, which inspired Missing You. You know what I'm saying? And then we made the whole tribute album, and then we all parties agreed. And people already know this part, but even me myself, as in like making that track and owning 50% of a 10 million selling, everybody signed off and donated all to Big Family. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Everybody signed off.
Good thing you had other hits.
Nah, I mean, it, God is great, man. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, what you do, and that's what some people might say, you got to give something to get some. We all donated every proceed, everything to Big Family and Big Kids. You know what I'm saying? Off that single.
Yeah.
Now, the next single is If You Think I'm Jiggy, and we tore the shit up.
I was going to ask about that. The Rod Stewart interpolation, the hook. Was that you? Was that them?
No, it was Puff. That was actually Puff. I ain't gonna lie, that song actually taught me a lot. You know, because at that stage, actually, even at that time, I was as dark as hell as hot. My mind and my spirit and my mentality is dark as hell as hot. So when we got Mace and the Lock signed to Bad Boy, Puff Vision was more worldwide. So at the same time, it was like, what the fuck is this shit? It was still a learning process for us. You know what I'm saying? So at the same time, we from the hood. Like, I don't want to hear no If You Think I'm Jiggy. Me, myself, I was like, I fucking hate this song. I'm keeping it 100. You know what I'm saying? I made the damn beat. You know what I'm saying? But at the time, our vision wasn't that broad yet because we was full of energy, but right off the street. You know what I'm saying? But Puff, you know, he had the whole Total, Biggie, and everything rocking already. He knows the shit. So actually, I learned from him. And when we did it, he was like, yeah. And I was like, huh? Even Dog was like, what? You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, Puff Vision and what Puff do is the shit. So we sat the fuck back and shut the fuck up and let that man do what he do. And that shit said, pew! You know what I'm saying? And it propelled, actually, Money, Power, Respect to 2 million records sold.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
So at then, like, and I'm going to tell you, this is real shit. That's why I want you to print this everywhere. It was my boy E-Snaps. Because I'm telling you, I was still, you know, gooned out. He's like, yo, man, you need to come to the tunnel, man. They playing your shit, man. Like, I don't give a fuck about no parties. But I took my ass down there, right? I'm in the middle of the tunnel.
For life, this your boy Bum B, the king of the trail, in the building. Long live Pimp C, you know what I'm saying? Have I ever been to the tunnel? Damn right I've been to the tunnel.
What's up? This your boy, the living legend right here, Genuine. And I got to ask myself, have I been to the tunnel? Yeah, I've been to the tunnel.
Yeah, what up? This is Uncle Murder. Did I ever go to the motherfucking tunnel, nigga? Yeah, I did. Actually, the first nigga to bring me in the tunnel was Chuck Chillout.
So I remember getting out the car and, you know what I'm saying, walking down the long alley like, man, hold up, cuz, where we going? Like, this ain't no club, you know what I'm saying?
I remember the atmosphere just being crazy. I remember everybody in the joint packed crazy. Everybody's just there supporting.
And I see everybody, woo, 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 ish da doo doo doo, ish, boom, 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 it ba doo doo doo, woo, woo. I'm like, oh shit, I'm doing some shit, man. And then I realized myself, besides just being a closed mind street individual or just doing music to rock the world, but just knowing I want to move the world, but doing it from a street perspective, it actually broadened my eyes up to the thing that I do, where do it affects that, you know?
Yeah, and so where do Wa and Dean from Rough Riders come in?
Actually, Wa. Joaquin Dean, man. Everybody got to give my man enough respect because Wa is a person that came to 29th Street Harlem and said, yo, man, if you put them beats you got with these artists that we have, we will have something. And them artists that he had was the Lox and X.
By X, he means DMX.
Not a bad group.
Not a bad group. And thank you, God, that Neiman, no matter all the crazy ways he went about it, he said, yo, man, I got money for you, man. I go, fuck, we getting money out here. Yo, I got equipment. Give a fuck about no equipment. Yo, this is a new label. I go, fuck about your label. Then Y came and said, yo, man, you better get down with us. I'm like, word? Ha ha, click, 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 click. What's popping? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, street stuff. We did what we did. Boom, boom, boom. Did what they're like, oh, shit. But he's like, nah, chill, man. But at the same time, if something came into me and said, you know what? This man is willing to die for what he believes in. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And this is very far-fetched to regular human beings. This man is willing to die for what he believed in. So you know what? Let me go up to Yonk and see what's popping. And there you have it.
Wow. And in the early days of Rough Riders, you had a younger member of the label founder's family around a lot, right? Little Swiss Beats.
Grammy Award-winning producer Swiss Beats is the nephew of Rough Riders founders Joaquin Waugh Dean, Darren D. Dean, and Siobhan Dean. Swizz began producing for the label when he was just 16 years old.
I don't even know if he had that name back then. What, you kind of mentored him, right?
You know, it's always a speculation and a rumor, and it's just a big, how you say it, elephant in the room about a situation. But it wasn't that I mentored Swizz. It's just that I'm the powerhouse guy that's doing what needs to get done, making the sound, making the lane with musically, with the artists, what they got. Because they've been doing songs a whole thousand years before me, and so on and so forth. But just making that lane and us like actually bridging something that it was something more for him to follow. Mm. So and words as mentor and as words as just showing how it was done and being there in the room, mm-hmm. you know. And like let's say like Swiss is a great fucking producer and a great fucking person. So I want to make sure all that stuff is clear because okay. I don't like how people be doing stuff. You know.
Of course, and you know. You told a story one time about how the first song you heard from X, you didn't like, but you heard like a spark of something. Do you remember what that song was? Did it ever turn into anything?
No, it was actually Why Broke Down. Why I had a white explorer and he came to the block, and the block is 29th and 95th.
Harlem resides north of Central Park, the northernmost edge of which sits along 110th Street. So when he says 29th and 5th, he means 129th Street and 5th Avenue.
And he had on Born Loser. Born Loser was released on Sony. Born Loser, not because I choose to be, but because all the bad shit happens to me. I got kids, but their mothers don't want them to know me. My sisters used to like me, but now they call me homie. And he played it, was like, yo, man, boom, boom, boom. And when I heard it, I didn't like it, you know what I'm saying? I like, nah, it's too, like how you say it, hip-hop-y, you know, like, what the fuck about it? You know, just too, it was a little too fucking much. Beat was fast, and blah, 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 too much shit. But the one thing that, about the song, I was like, nah, the nigga on there, though, was saying some shit, but they ain't getting captured. You know what I'm saying? So production might have been a little, I don't know, poppy or commercial. I don't know what the fuck. But I mean, it was a great song. And like, you know, people be pissed off me when I'm saying, but I don't give a fuck. But I just say catch me. But the artist caught me. You know what I'm saying?
Can you talk a little bit about the making of It's Dark and Hell Is Hot? I know you did it in Georgia. Did you compose while in the studio? Did you have a bunch of beats you brought down? Did you actually track X's vocals? Like, how did all that go?
It was a couple steps process. You know what I'm saying? Because, let me try to use my brain as a time machine real quick. I'm rolling up too while we're talking. Boom. We started actually when I did come there too, it wasn't only Swiss, it was PK that was there too.
Anthony Fields, known as PK or P Killer Tracks, is a producer who has worked extensively with Rough Riders artists like DMX, The Lox, and Drag On. He produced or co-produced 8 songs on the album Dame is talking about here. DMX's debut, It's Dark and Hell Is Hot.
What it was, Dog, he always had like 6 to 10 books of rhymes and shit. So like even before we cracked in, you know what I'm saying, I was like, let me hear some. So we just started sending all type of rhymes. And them shits was like, for me as a producer, it was colorful. You know, it was like, it wasn't the same shit. And if it was the same shit, it was fucking painted in a different way. You know what I'm saying? Different things. So it's like, yo, you saying wild shit. So it was my job. So I got to capture this shit, man. You know what I'm saying? So coming to the more theatric tracks, you know what I'm saying? More of that New York grit with the theatric tracks. And then when we put that with the theatric she was kicking, now we got a blueprint. You know what I'm saying? We got some shit to fuck with. You know what I'm saying? So from there, you know what I'm saying? Everybody started doing their thing. PK, Swiss, myself. No, actually, Swiss was real young at the first album and shit. He was super young. But actually, me and PK, you know what I'm saying, just really started cranking in and doing things and shit. It's just like to really bring that sound out, you know, so, you know, he could do what he does.
Yeah. The Phil Collins sample on I Can Feel It.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight.
I know that kind of went, to get clear, that went way up to the top of the corporate food chain, right? Like, can you tell me about that?
No, the clear that Phil Collins sample, that is one of the things that you call, I mean, that other people will call all type of names, but to us, that's what you call real super gangster goon. You know what I'm saying? Like, at the time, and super ultimate respect to a great artist like Phil Collins, man. It's like, he wasn't really clearing records for rap music. You know what I'm saying? Because it just wasn't, you know, at certain points in rap music, it wasn't generating to a superb pop culture or superb message culture. You know what I'm saying? Keeping the honey. You know what I'm saying? It was, you know, it's what it is. So everybody couldn't grasp it. You know what I'm saying? At the time, Lior.
Record executive Lior Cohen.
He was like, I know Phil. This fucking song is great. And I know Phil. I met him. So actually, Lior reached out to Phil Collins and they talked. And I wasn't there. But cool to cool as I can remember hearing that, you know, Lior told him that, like, this guy is the next generation. He's a great artist. He's not just a rapper. You know, and I guess Phil heard the record and different things, and he vibed with dog to clear the record, and the record got cleared, you know. And it was I believe it was the first time Phil Collins cleared anything for hip hop.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
After a little bit of research, we found that In the Air Tonight was actually cleared by Collins for use on Shaquille O'Neal's song Edge of the Night 2 years prior to DMX using it. Oh Lord.
Cashmere, two of them joints, call me Shaq, baby, can you feel me?
I can feel it calling in the air.
And were you actually in the studio when X did the vocals for Damien? I ask about that song in particular because, you know, he has the two different characters and sort of changes his voice.
Ain't be like you, but my friends call me Damien, and I'ma put you into something about this Damien. You and me can take it there, and you'll be the hottest nigga ever living.
That's a given.
You'll see.
That's what I've been wanting all my life, thinking about my little man, so I call my wife.
You engineered that?
I recorded it, yeah.
What was it like to watch him kind of go from one character to the other?
No, see, that's the thing. When he had them 20 motherfucking books, and he kicked that shit, he kicked that verse. I'm like, hold up, got a beat for that. Bang. Kicked this verse, hold up, got a beat for that. He kicked a song called Heat. Hold up, I got a beat for that. But Heat actually came on Flesh in My Flesh, produced by Swiss. But the original version, I produced it. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of original, like, boom, every, like, rhymes that he would say, I would match a musical sound up with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know what I'm saying? It'd be crazy. But, I mean, it's on him. He write that shit, you know? And that's just the thing. Like, you know, for me as a producer with a colorful mind and ear, it's only my duty and job, but God's will, for the meet up with the artist with the same, you know? Hell yeah.
Yeah. To you, what musical elements make up a DMX beat?
Drums, bass, to begin with. And then screech. Screech. Drums, bass, and screech. Whatever your screecher element is going to be, you got to screech. Because it can't be no simple shit, because he screeches. And he's drum and bass. So it got to be the elements of that.
Mm.
You think about it. X Records, you know what I'm saying? It's the number one workout records, sports records, you know what I'm saying? Sports anthem, driving anthems, you know what I'm saying, of all time. You know, compare it next to rock and roll.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, you know, especially stuff off that Get At Me Dog and Fucking With D or whatever, or just like...
Right. And even a new one, like when I listen to Mo Wings and shit, I immediately want to do some fucking push-ups. Like,
I'm hot like Mo Wings. Mo Damien, Mo Things. Red Bull nigga about to grow wings. Down for real, that's what flow means.
I'm
hot like
yeah.
For real, like, and I played the other day, I'm like, God damn, I just dropped the 20 real quick.
And real quick, we have one of our regular listeners is dying to know if he'll ever get to hear all the instrumentals from that record.
That's on Def Jam.
Gotcha.
I could do what I could do, but, you know what I'm saying, we got to respect the contract, respect the Lord.
Right.
Certain things on Def Jam.
Yeah. And I saw you did back in right around that time, maybe a few years later, I think it was like 99, you did some stuff with Tricky.
You watch too many films. Too many films are real. And some of the guys you take too seriously.
your record deal.
That was very, very different than all the rap stuff you were doing at the time.
Yo, that shit was cool as a motherfucker. Tricky's my guy. That was real cool, man. It's and once again, it was Leo, you know what I'm saying? It was Leo who actually paired us up, you know what I'm saying, with different things. With the bass on, like it's hip hop, it's New York gritty, you know what I'm saying? But it's my music is very broader than just that, you know what I'm saying? And it was Leo who actually saw the vision of it. I mean, it had Tricky sign Island, which was a part of Def Jam back then, which was like, you know, two companies we both was working in. So he was like, yo, man, I need a... Matter of fact, they started the album with Muggs, with DJ Muggs. Shout out to Cypress Hill, DJ Muggs, you know what I'm saying? Be Real Sin. Like, you know what I'm saying? They started the album with DJ Muggs, different things. And Leo was like, yo, man, we need to bring in some of that shit you're doing with this dude into the element of some of that. But not that, though. You know, but just something with a heavy bottom, but, you know... So it was I came in after Muggs produced a couple of tracks, you know what I'm saying? I listened down to it, you know what I'm saying, and with my engineer Rich Keller, shout out to Rich Keller, because Rich Keller played a lot of instruments on there, he mixed and everything, you know what I'm saying? We just saw blending European, New York ghetto, West Coast funk. We just saw blending everything, you know, together, you know, to make it to juxtapose, you know. We had fun doing it too. You know, shout out to Mad Dog who dropped them verses on it.
On the weekend, we went creep when the team in the East End with the D's them. Pretend the gangster lean went, ain't never had a grind between them. Whip out man and wife and keep friend when they can't go talk, they can't please them. Then why we ain't saying the rocks up? You never know what to tell the car park. Might turn around to get out.
And if you, you know, put this out to Mad Dog, he's ever out there in London, man, that's my guy. And I'm going to say it, this is clean, right? That's my nigga. You know what I'm saying? Mad Dog, fuck out of there, that's my guy. He dropped them verses on it. Big yeah. Tricky. And I forgot the Asian lady was singing on it, but she dope as shit too.
Yeah.
Hey, yo, we're free, yes, no need to be free. Walking around with unsatisfied needs.
Don't let the rules away.
Hey, yo, we're free, yes, no need to be free. Walking around with unsatisfied needs.
The singer's name is Kyoko Williams.
I want to talk more generally about your drums for a second.
Yeah.
And the reason I ask about it is underneath, I think at the core of a lot of your drum patterns is like a traditional kind of boom bap thing, but you'll like always fuck it up in some way. Right, you'll have weird sounds.
20,000 Nicky Nicky poppers. 20,000 Nicky Nicky 20,000.
Or, you know, fast hi hats. Odd percussion. Sort of artificial sounding drum sounds. Weird syncopation in other parts of the beat. You always kind of take this boom bap thing, but disguise it, at least to my ear. Can you talk about your ideas towards drums a little bit?
You know what? That's cool, man. Damn, man. You know what? You're a real interviewer because you actually be listening. You know, it's a lot of things that's being done sonically that people can only catch the outer surface of what's being done. Oh my God, that shit's all, oh my God. But not really catching the message that's in between of what's actually being there. You know, and that's just, you know, that's just anything. But as far as like with the drums and the different things, it's like, my thing is, it's like, I'm, keep it 100, I am the 1800s to, shit, 3015. You know, and I leave that much leeway into reducing production and different things because I know the key to music is timeless records, and that's just what it is. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if you're thinking of a time, it's cool to be in that time, but it's also every 5 years, the game and the world is going to change. You know what I'm saying? So if you're not back a few years or ahead a few years, you're just here. You know, and I might be going off the drums, but we're going to the drums. It's like, it come to like, I blend, how you say it, every instrument from live to SP 1200 to Kyer to NPC to back to live. You know what I'm saying? To bring in something that's like real unique, you know? Like, it might take me a week to do a track or a certain shit, but the people would never know that. you know?
Yeah. And one other stylistic thing that I noticed, I was listening to Rockefeller Billionaires, you know, Big Spender, whatever the title, real title is. And I noticed you have that like repeating note motif.
30 mil in the bank, 30 grand on the wrist, and 20 more in the Swiss, and 30 birds in the tank, diamonds all in the face. I find your face when it glistens. It's just fake, not that Chrissy, and you know what we drink. Got my heart.
And then I went back and listened to a bunch of the other stuff, and you do that a lot, where you'll have one repeating note either through the whole track or for long stretches of time. Where did that come from?
What you talk about the, all right. Hey, baby, which one you talk about? Like the
yeah, that track, but like during the verses, there's just like one pitch that kind of goes through the whole verse.
No, that's the part that you do your push-ups on. That's the part that you get pumped up. That's the drum roll, because the big fucking the big climax is coming. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and like I said, when I make beats, so I'm actually make beats for the artists. You know what I'm saying? So I actually put a good section in there where the artist can go ham on, go off on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I say stuff on records, but my profession is fucking producing. So I like to always, like, actually say, you can't be a good producer unless you know how to rap too. Hello. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, it's like, I put that leeway for the artist to go ham. Like, a lot of songs I do, I leave that leeway to go to artist school to go ham, to show off their skills. It might not be, how you say it, the record just to make the hit, or how you say it, just do what it is, just to make it so everybody believe. But I like to, for me, showing on productions, I like the artist to show off too. And that's what actually will make them timeless records, because an artist would do something they haven't done on other records on the beat that I produce for.
Interesting. So the idea of having like a lot of melody in a verse section, that might kind of get in the way.
Right, right.
But when you do have melodies, they're usually pretty great, and they're short, sometimes two beats, sometimes four beats, but you'll repeat them and they work. What's the key to you to writing melodies that can actually work when they're repeated, you know, 5, 10, 20, 40 times?
Evaluate.
So just play it a bunch and see if you don't get sick of it.
Exactly.
You know, I guess like one of the other things is a lot of the beats you make both by yourself and with other people sound pretty dark. What's the key to making something sound eerie?
I'm not going to lie. That is actually natural. And that got to do with probably, you know, the inner person of who I am. You know, the inner person of who I am, besides who I've grown to be, is a realistic. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, I grew up on the streets, and a lot of people are like, oh my God, I grew up in the streets, oh my God. But it's been very different for me, and it's really nothing to actually sit back and complain about. And this where actually I might get into politics coming to the future. Because it's not policy, it's like actually saying something, but it's all turned fucking political, you know. But I grew up with no, how you say it, like not much influence, you know. There was never nobody to tell me to go home or do good from 8 to 9 years old. So everything that's been learned in life has been natural. And at a time from being born until like, it's been a very dark period. You know what I'm saying? So at the same time, with having that, you know, I don't look away from that, because that's the thing that grabs and then pulling out these melodies and pulling out the feeling of many people actually coming to a part. Now, the name might be dark or different thing, but I actually call it actually feeling the soul music. It might be almost like scoring. And when you're looking at a movie, you need a dramatization of music to pull you into to really grasp it. And that's what I actually do is musically. So it might be dark, you know, on some things it might say that, but it's really drama and really music that pulls out the natural thing. the one by Big Brother that raps, he pulled out the natural thing of human beings of saying what we're doing or what's really going on besides what we can do and what else is going on. So it's actually the same thing that happened with music, you know?
That makes sense. Whenever people ask you about your favorite producers, you know, you'll switch up names sometimes. You have a few standards or whatever. The answers vary. You always, always, always mention Gamble and Huff. What is it about that Philly soul thing for you?
We was born off that. Well, I was born off that. I was born in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If I was born a couple years earlier, it would have been Motown. You're introduced to everything with your first seeing of it, your first feeling of it. Actually, like my big brother say, man, like Dog say, you might not remember nothing, but you will always remember everything by, how you say, hear, taste, and smell. You can smell something, remember something. You can taste something, remember something. You can hear something, remember something. Your mind might not work like that, though. You know what I'm saying? But when it comes down to that, it was a groove, man. It's a groove. You know what I'm saying? Motown was a rhythm, and motherfucking the Philly sound was a groove. That's how I go. When you start taking the motherfucking grooves, like boom, da-doom, ba-doom, ba-doom, and start putting some motherfucking, how you say, that's the groove right there, man.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, like I said, and that's cool. Like, man, y'all cool, man. Y'all be really paying attention. But I actually do say it comes from Bomb Squad, Dre, Tribe Called Quest, and I say R. Kelly as a producer, as I said before. Different things, you know what I'm saying? Just different elements. So, even down, like I said, like I just looked at the Outkast, the fucking documentary on Organized Noise. Triple, duper, super, duper, duper, bang, 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 salute. So I might go outside a little two shots right now. Like real shit. Like,
two shots for Organized Noise. Yeah.
Fuck it right. Damn real. You know what I'm saying? That's what it's about. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, with producers, man, like how you said, a lot of people want something, but we actually really just want a fucking great record, man.
And so for someone who grew up such a big fan of Tribe and the Bomb Squad, did you ever go through a sample heavy phase in your own production?
No. I'm all American, man. Like, I did, you know, like, trust me, thank you, God, that I can play music. And if I'm not playing, I can orchestrate, I can do anything with live, anything music, but I don't stray away from that. I'm not one of the persons that actually said, I come from here, so I have to do this. I don't even like them people. I'm sorry. There's no way in the world that says I produce DMX and I can't like Migos. Sorry, you quote this, but you can suck my dick. I like music. And I like good music. You know what I'm saying? So when it comes down to anything, to whatever it is, I do everything. Everything. I can play everything. I can play fucking keyboards, fucking sequence, patterns, drum machines, guitars, pianos, and all that. But a hot fucking loop is a hot loop. Sorry. I'm going to do it. I'm not with it. You know what I'm saying? And quote that, I don't like that shit, man, with people, man. I don't like because you're from an era that you can't appreciate everything else in the world. You are a selfish person. And that shit ain't right. And if hip-hop really saved your life, you would want it to grow. You would not want it to stop where you want it to stop at. You're selfish. Now, some shit might be out your range, because some shit be out my range, like, oh, my God. But it's the culture. And it's what the fuck we made. It's what we made before us. It's what we do.
And kind of one final stylistic thing, on a ton of your beats, you'll have, you know, almost always some kind of acoustic piano sound.
Black.
what is it about that sound that you keep coming back to it?
Oh, it's the melody, man. Like, shit, you gonna make me plug my piano now. You know, actually, it's some of the elements I learned, from Puff, you know what I'm saying, that I learned in my Bad Boy days. Me as 18 and 19 and Bad Boy, you know what I'm saying? It's like I might send somebody a beat, but that beat is not finished until you do your vocals. You know what I'm saying? And that, matter of fact, that beat is that beat, but a song is not a song, a production is not a production until I get the vocals or until I know where the vocals is going so I can add my extra elements to it. So if it's me bringing me playing live bass, bringing the live pianos, guitars, well, I got to, like I said, and thank you to Joe Silver from the movie scores, which actually taught me a lot more. If I got to fly one little fucking guy from Japan with a big-ass drum to hit that one drum, I will do that.
Yeah. You did a bunch of scoring for X's movies, and I actually wanted to ask about that a little bit. I know you had the guy you just mentioned do a lot of the transcribing and orchestrating.
Yeah.
But then you did a score with George Duke.
What kind of work did you say you were in again?
Various investments around town.
Give it up!
This is America.
George Duke was a keyboard pioneer who was equally at home in jazz, fusion, rock, and pretty much anywhere else. In addition to his over 30 solo albums, he also worked with Frank Zappa, Miles Davis, Jill Scott, Michael Jackson, Phil Collins, and countless others. He worked with Dame Grease on the score of the 2004 film Never Die Alone.
What was that like, working with like an improvising musician like that as opposed to a vocalist?
Well, actually, just on the score, let me pull back, man. I want to really say so. You know, and this is for all of Hollywood, and this is for all the world, and a lot of, rest in peace to my guy, Dan the Man, Dan Cracchiola.
Dan Cracchiola started out as an assistant to mega producer Joel Silver, and worked his way up to being a producer on movies including The Matrix, Conspiracy Theory, and Lethal Weapon 4. He died in June 2004 after a motorcycle accident.
Which is my guy, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of people know him in Hollywood. He produced The Matrix and different things, but I'm not going to lie. When I went out there, when a lot of people in Hollywood just looked at me as he from Harlem, he got hit records, but what that mean? He actually took me motherfucking in his motherfucking house, in his mansion, and said, Grease, take all this shit. Come on, let's get everything. I believe in what you do, you know? And he taught me how to score in certain things and certain shit. You know what I'm saying? And then about the time I came to Joel Silver and present the material, Joel was like, yep, check, 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 check. Good, 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 good. You know what I'm saying? So now I really, really pay a lot of respect to that. You know, and that's my motherfucking guy, man. Day of the man, man.
Yeah. And as far as George Duke, what was that sitting down with a keyboardist like that like?
Shit, that was amazing. Man. As he said, call him Dookie. You know, man. It was real cool, man. Because it's like, I ain't gonna lie, man. George told me stories. He told me, you know, and like, and even to this next path of my life, because I'm on my third lifetime right now. Still a young man. And all the stories from everywhere, man, they're going to deter and determine his future. Like, George, he told me stories about Quincy and making Bad and Thriller on all of them. Because he played on them records.
Right. You know,
and he told me the stories, man. Same as Joe. Joe Silver told me the stories about how he really fucked with the cultures. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, Beverly Hills Cop, Lethal Weapon. Oh, you always put a black and a white cast in every movie.
Wow.
That's, I don't think I've ever known that. He told me that, man. I think he's from Philly or whatever, but when he said, grew up in the hood, he always put in that shit. I'm like, whoa, man, that's crazy, man. And I didn't think about it. And then he brought me in his office and said, Grease, you know what? The only things, fuck Emmys, fuck Grammys, fuck all that. The only thing that matter is these four plaques right here. And this one is $500 million. This one is $500 million. This was $500 million. This was $500 million. And that's $2 billion. So whatever you're going to do, make that. Fuck the rest of the shit. And I said, you motherfucking right.
You know, on a more personal note, I met a guy who I knew was connected with you, but I didn't know how closely a few years back. Bigger Threat, wonderful, wonderful dude.
Oh, that's my guy. That's my co-dude. That's the capo.
I didn't realize he was your co-engineer.
Exactly.
Look at this shit, man. I done burned this thing out. We do shifts. I do 12 hours. Bigger Threat do 12 hours. That's how we do it. He's a rapper slash engineer slash capo. That's what we do. I don't go fuck your boy Dan Grease.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. And I guess that kind of leads me into the wave thing. I guess even before we get into how it started, how would you describe the sound of the wave music, the stuff you did with, you know, Max B, French Montana, Bigger Threat, that whole crew?
Oh, shit. And there we go. New wave, Gambler Huff. The groove, baby. New wave, Gambler Huff, man. You know, like when we all hooked up, you know, Max was doing the gym thing, the Bird Gang.
In 2006, Max B signed a deal with Jim Jones's label, Bird Gang. After a series of disagreements, he left the label in 2008.
But, you know, everybody's from fucking the hood. You know, whatever it is. There's, you know, if you could do it, you might can make that. If you could do a geological map of Harlem where the stars and entertainers from, there would be fucking dots everywhere. You know what I'm saying? And different things like that. But,
mm-hmm.
No, Max was doing the gym thing. It actually was Max's older brother, man. You know, and I think, you know, we're going to put this out there. So I think a lot of people need to give a lot of respect to my man, Mike Murder, making projects. You know, my guy, Mike, came to me in a bar on 135th and 7th one night. And was like, yo, Grease, man, you have to get my brother. I'm like, the fuck you talking about? I'm like, this motherfucker, he's hot and he's fucking crazy, man. He's running out here, man. You know, he won't listen to me, man. You got to get him. And when I looked at Mike's eyes, he was telling the truth. He was like, I'm like, okay, all right, I could feel that. Okay, I could hear you, but I could feel that. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, I'm like, all right, let's do what we do. At the time, I was working on my Goon Music album, you know what I'm saying? And the Goon Music album was actually a start of something because, you know, I remember I did the Live of Linux, produced for everybody. But, you know, my label baked a lot, you know what I'm saying? With the, how you say it, with the sound, with the way the music's going to go and different things, you know, with being a person, you be saying things to people that can't really hear you. You know, but guess what? Clean your fucking hands and do the shit your goddamn self. So that's why I went in. I did it myself. So I'm doing Goon Music on my goddamn self. I got my Cody, Bigger Threat. Let's go. I put the homies on it, but this is my motherfucking album. Now I said, Max, come do a joint with me. He did Connecticut Kush.
I love smoking that Connecticut good Kush when I be OTN, and we don't cough unless none of that good bush, none of that good bush, none of that good bush.
He heard the whole album. He said, Grease, oh shit, I know what you're doing. And we ain't really talk. I said, you know what I'm doing? He said, I know what you're doing. I said, you sure? I know what you're doing. I got it. You got it? Here, it's all yours. Cause I ain't a fucking rapper, but it's all yours. I do what I do best. That's why from Goon Music 1, which was Connecticut Kush with Max, to Goon Music 1.5, I reversed the whole process. So I rapped on every song on Goon Music 1 and Max on 1. Then Goon Music 1.5, I reversed it. I rapped on one song and Max rapped on every song.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Goon Music where you use a lot of vocal processing and stuff, pitch shifting.
Now we the Goon Gods, we worship God Jewel. You push small cars, we push bitches. Try to live from out of jail cell. It's a block hell, more like a block shell.
How'd you get into that? Why'd you do that?
Nah, because, you know, I've been around the world, man. I'm European. I got the sounds from Japan, from Libya. I'm from everywhere. My mind is, I'm universal. So I put all that shit into my shit. You know what I'm saying? It's cool now that the world is doing it now, but I put everything into it, you know what I'm saying? And one, that even when I do artistry, like I said, I'm not a rapper. I'm an artist. So I'm not going to come and like, motherfucker, and I'm not going to spit the verse you looking for. I'm going to spit what the fuck I feel and what the world need. And that's what I do. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I just put everything. I'm a producer. I'm an engineer. I'm a creator. You know what I'm saying? So I do everything. I experiment on myself, actually. Keep it 100.
Yeah.
Like, I'm never going to do an X shit like that. He like, Chris, the fuck you doing? So I experiment on myself. I still have ideas.
And, you know, speaking of the wave stuff, I want to talk about French for a second. As someone you know, you've seen him go from, you know, someone who, that guy who pestered people for interviews on DVDs to, you know, mixtape guy to, wow, he's got some hit songs. Seeing him go from mixtape stuff to, like, being in the tabloids and shit, what was that like?
That's actually fucking beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, I ain't like, I'm actually French, you know. I met French from Max. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, I hooked up with Max from his older brother, Mike Murder. You know what I'm saying? So at the same time, like I said, I'd done all these things, the accolades and, you know, in the world already. DMX album, Mace album, Lox album, different things. My label make a lot of different things, so on and so forth. You know, when shit started getting stale, I jump into shit my damn self because I love music and I'm going to do music to the day the breath God takes away. But same time, it's when we all came linked up, you know. French was doing, French wasn't really rapping that good then. He was like, actually was like bullshit. But he had the Cocaine City DVDs thing that was going on. And then at the same time, you know, say him and Max hooked up. And they said, yo, Chris, you want to do this this project? I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to come in and I'm going to do what I do. Boom, boom, boom. So I started pulling the wave down, you know what I'm saying, so on and so forth. Boom, French and Max did a lot of collaboration joints. You know what I'm saying? French started getting a lot better. See, the thing is, French is a smart person. He's not an idiot. You know what I'm saying? You know how to hustle. You know how to apply yourself. You know how to get what it is. And even if you stand out there all night for or into for a DVD, as the world knows, it pays off. So whatever you got to do to get what you got to do, you do that shit like a motherfucker, believe in yourself. You know what I'm saying? So at the same time, we started putting it down and we started doing our great music. We did the Coke Wave. And, you know, they had the dope songs, but as the same method that I did with Is Dark and Hell Inside and making a great album, is the same actually method that I play out with the Coke Wave DVDs, with the Mac and Cheese mixtapes, with the all the, when I was around, all the Wave mixtapes that gave it that album feel to make you fuck with it. Because it's the same process that I put on Is Dark and Hell Inside to make it an album, to make it great. You know, my job as a producer is to make the artist stick out, not just my beat. The artists have to fucking rock. That's why I put them break loops in there so the artist can go off. You know what I'm saying? It ain't about me. I'm 50%. The artist is the other 50%. 100%, we make history, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I do have to ask about one other artist you worked with. You did a bunch of stuff with Old Dirty Bastard, God Bless the Dead, but only one song, as far as I know, ever came out. First off, what were those sessions like? And second, will we ever get to hear that stuff?
Okay, Dirt, all right. There actually is three songs publicly with Dirt that me and Dirt did. One is on the Rush Hour soundtrack. It's called And You Don't Stop Us with the whole Wu-Tang Clan, but it's not at all. It's just me and Dirty.
In my rest, I'm analyzing thoughts. I'm sipping off a quart that I just had bought. I'm thinking of the moments they saw in that head. I feel sure enduring, also glad.
That's a Rush Hour soundtrack, and You Don't Stop.
Right.
First is me and Dirk did the whole song, but then, you know, all the Wu came in, bang. That's on the Rush Hour soundtrack. This one of the seconds is actually on one of the independent albums he put out. We did it with Drag, but it ended up with Nori on it. And we do it like this. Like, I'm still on the hook on the shit.
I'm a family man, but I still hold twos like a handyman. Say my name three times like Candyman. Let's go, what, ha, cause we can do it like this. Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Dirt made it grow. It got the beat. Dirt made it grow. When it called for fire. We can do it like this. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Bang. That joint, it came on an independent album. I think his last album we put out, it was on there with Nori. And I'm my producer. But I'm actually on the vocal on the hook too. And then the third one was my Move Back remix. That actually came and put a verse on. A group Lynx Avalanche.
Milk ears with the money color check. Ill two step, blowing dubs are the best. Live life most hated with my Lynx Avalanche. Remix, Move Back, Grease providing all the noise. Your home.
That's the one I heard. That's the one that's on the Osiris tape, which I think was posthumous.
Oh, he put that shit on there?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, I can't keep track of these. Shout out to my lawyer, Janice Shin. She keeps tracks on all the technical stuff. Hello.
Definitely. And so you are in the middle of a Guinness World Record book attempt right now for the most hip hop songs produced in a year.
Yes, sir.
Wow. So how'd you get the idea to do that? Do you know what the previous record is? Like, just tell me a little bit about that whole thing.
Actually, I really don't know what the previous record is, but I looked at my year. I actually looked at all my years, you know, whatever hit mainstream to whatever hit underground, you know. And really been saying about it and looking at it like, yo, I'm fucking kicking ass, yo. You know what I'm saying? And really look at it like, oh, shit. Like, hold on. Let's not get it twisted. Shout out to motherfucking Riff Raff, my brother Jody High Roller, that we put the hologram panda out there that fucking shook up the whole world. Like, really, like, now? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that's what I be on. Like, I don't be on the things that everybody else want to be on. I'm on the shit, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's a album and a mixtape that fucking changed the game. You know what I'm saying? But whose world is it to change? This is a big globe. There's so many pockets of everything, you know? And I'm here to work. And actually, thank you, God, for being a part of everyone, you know? So it's like, what's your question again?
Oh, just about the record. What gave you the idea to sort of go for the Guinness book?
It's that. Mm-hmm. And what I was getting on, just last year, the year before, I released so many records and so many things. It's like, this year, I know I am. So I might as well have it documented, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, as we all know, we would not be doing this interview if I wasn't around, like, and just to keep it 100, I did not put my face out in public till I was doing the Max and Frenchie things. All down when it come down to the DMX and Lox and Mace stuff, I kept myself behind the scenes. You know what I'm saying? And different things got to check. So with coming to the only put my face out with Max and French until the time come to doing the whole Wave Gang Mystery series, I have not been public. So people have heard me and felt me, but nobody knows me. Well, hip hop knows me, but you know, the general public does not. So at the same time, it comes a time that everything you do have to be accounted for, you know, and it have to be put out there. So I said from this year, I'm gonna go for the Guinness Book of World Records, every Book of World Records, and where that comes to being just that one one goal. Everything else is going to be accomplished in the middle of that, which is actually being done. So far as the number one record, as far as bringing the whole sound back, as far as bringing hip-hop back, what everybody keep telling me, but I don't care what everybody says, because I don't care about them. I care about the music. Boom. And just doing the music, what it is going to do it. And just this year alone, you know, I have, like, albums. Me and Swifty McVay have a whole album done. You know, me and Planet Asia have a whole album done. Me and J Mills have two albums done. Me and Noriega have an album done. Me and Styles P have an album done. Okay, that's not even the vacant out artists I go to. You know, that's not even the songs that are with Rihanna or Kendrick Lamar or the other records that we putting out in between of putting out me as a Dame Grease as a producer records, Dame Grease as a label on the records, and Dame Grease as the underground guy records. So I'm just pushing out every slew of everything, of every record that it is, it just, you know, just do what it is, you know? And that alone is going to set the Guinness Book of World Records, you know?
And follow up with Riff Raff, a possibility?
What? I don't even want to talk about the shit that me and Riff Raff got going. Like, I'm not going to even lie. Like, I really fucking love that boy, man. Oh, yeah, man.
You know, like you said, you haven't been that public except in recent years, but one piece of press you did that was pretty wild was you had a appearance on the Dr. Phil show while DMX was there. What was that like?
You know, that was a little different. You know, it's crazy because I was on the Dr. Drew show, but I was just an audience with that fucking yellow black and gray shirt on. I saw him. I was looking stupid. Now, I'm real, man. Fuck it. I look stupid. Fuck it. But the Dr. Phil was a little different, man, because it was like actually Doug did the Allende Fix My Life show, which was a complete disaster sabotage. You know, that was real, you know, like family-wise, because like that's my family. You know, like I don't know, like, this music and this family. You know, matter of fact, there's music, there's family, and then there's business. You know, so at the same time, you know, that was a little kind of, you know, whatever it was. But at the same time, Dr. Phil agreed to do a show, and Phil came into the office. He actually pulled me and Dog to the office by ourselves, you know, and he talked to us. And, you know, and Dr. Phil is a big 6 foot tall, broad shoulder, real Texan dude, straight up. And he pulled us off and said, listen, man, we ain't doing no ambush shit over here, man, but we gonna do the fuck we need to do, and we gonna tell it for real. And that's what's up, Phil, you know what I'm saying? So at the same time, I did, you know, the thing, and, you know, and we talked about what it is, but, you know, it's what it is. Like, you know, the world is the world, you know? Oh, well, actually, because I'm thinking about the show, and they start getting me sentimental. Hello, sorry. You know, right, but other than that, what I realized that the power of daytime television is totally different from hip-hop underground, hip-hop mainstream, television, and movies. It's totally different realms. It was different. Like, you know, a lot of my old girlfriends, moms, and aunts was calling me, oh, my God, he talks so nice. You know what I'm saying? Like, like, what she just thought I wasn't going all day. Like, come on, I got kids. Like, hello. So, and, you know, it's different.
Yeah. So you're getting into movies now. You have a short film that you co-wrote, co-produced. What's up with that?
It's actually it's something real. Actually, it's something like, I don't even want to talk about it. I'm not ready for it. I got more work to do before that.
I saw the trailer. It looks like a comedy.
Where the hell are we going?
Oh, what do you mean?
I mean, none of this looks familiar. That's what I mean.
Sir, I would like to know that I've been a limousine for over 10 years, so I know where I'm going. Big man, you mind if I ask you one more question about the ad phone, eh?
What is it, Playboy?
It have GPS?
What? You lost?
It's the best shit in the world, but, you know, I got a little more work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little more work to do. I might be on a reality show coming out.
Really? What can you say about that? Just between us.
Yeah, man, fuck that shit. Print everything. Man, fuck that shit. My life is public. But, yeah, man, I got might be a reality show called House Rules. We Network. That's what I'm going to say.
Nice. And finally, and you obviously don't have to answer this at all. You can certainly refuse to comment, but how is X doing?
Oh, he's fucking great. Nah, Dog is good, man. Dog is good. He's fucking great. He's spectacular. I could call him on the phone right now. You're like, fuck you doing, Grease? Hey, you cool, man. You know, it's always and I keep saying, I don't want to be that, because sometimes people be kind of coming at me. You taking up for him? We saw the video. Like, you know, I got different realms than me. You know, there's Dangerous the producer, there's DMX brother, there's the producer for Max B that's locked up for this many years, there's the producer I know, French Montana, there's the guy who owns Vacant Eye Records. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know all these different realms. And then people don't know there's dad. Hello. Hello. There's fucking dad.
Yeah.
And actually, now there's grandpa. Hello. You little niggas is older, right? Like one or two. But I'm only 41. They're born out 15, 16. This is what little street do, man. We gotta change the game. That's how we do. But we gotta learn from the game and make the game grow. There's no anything in anything. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Dame, thank you so much for your time, man. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm about to rock out. Yo, check it out. Yo, listen to this new Sha Ill mixtape. I just dropped it today. This shit is crazy.
One of the ongoing themes of this show, mostly because of where we record, is Harlem. So it was great to have Dame, who has such a background in the borough, giving us stories about battling there, and about so many of the neighborhood's key figures like Big Al, Mace, and Cam'ron. And that was only the beginning. It's rare to get an in-depth look at a producer's style, down to the choices in drum patterns, melodies, and vocal sounds, and Dame was generous enough to share it all. I hope you enjoyed hearing that stuff as much as I enjoyed asking about it, and I also hope the producers in the audience were taking copious notes. Join us next week when our guest will be Robert Spud Seawright. Spud is a drummer who has played with everyone under the sun. Hip-hop fans may know him from his work with Snoop Dogg or Kendrick Lamar or Timbaland. Gospel fans will remember him as part of Kirk Franklin's group God's Property. And jazz heads will know him as a driving force behind the virtuosic band Snarky Puppy. We talk about Ghost production, his work on To Pimp a Butterfly, what it felt like to win a Grammy while still in his teens, and a whole lot more. Like I said at the beginning, make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to The Cypher on your podcast app of choice. If that app is iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating or a review. And don't forget to visit patreon.com/thecyphershow if you enjoy the program, and you can help us out for as little as $1 a month. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotaro.
We was little dirty motherfuckers. You ain't had no parents. We was out there.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
As he said, call him Dookie.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
Me, myself, I was like, I fucking hate this song.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
So I might go outside a little two shots right now.
Our intern is Aziza Hassan.
Now I'm all American, man.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Benjamin Bray.
Which is my guy.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Hey, producer. Hey, check this out. Got me and my bottle of Hennessy. You're going to get a good interview. All right. Next.
Okay.